This is Neelan Parker, and I'm here with James Wallace at the National Elections Commission in Monrovia, Liberia. If we could just begin by discussing briefly what your role was in the 2005 elections and what your background is.
Specifically, in the 2005 elections, I held and continuing to hold the position of Director of Training. And as the Director of Training of the National Elections Commission of Liberia, my basic responsibilities were to organize training programs relative to the electoral activities that we were to embark upon, and to design those implementable framework by which those designed training programs could be implemented, and then to make substantive follow-ups on those training programs in terms of their delivery, and then to finally evaluate basic lessons learned from those trainings that were delivered relevant to the electoral activities that were being planned. So in summary, those were my activities in the 2005 elections.
Wonderful. I'm going to ask you just a little bit about a couple of the parts of the election, beginning with registration. Could you describe how registration of voters took place in 2005?
Well, the registration of elections in 2005 was quite an interesting process. First and foremost, the registration took place in June of that year, and then it stretched for a little over a month or so. And at the policy level of the commission, which is that sector that is constituted of the members of the Board of Commissioners, policies were being developed. And those policies actually are basic reflections of their general administrative and supervisory understanding of what it is to be able to design the regulatory framework for the conduct of elections, especially in a post-war context. Those elections were under specific circumstances, special elections, reasons being that certain provisions of the statutory laws of our own country as well as the Constitution were suspended in order to provide for the holding of those elections within the context of the complicated legal regime that we had operating and the impossibility to do anything further given those constraints. My responsibility as it relates to the voter registration exercise was to collaborate with international partners who specifically were people from the United Nations Electoral Division to formulate electoral procedures as it relates to elections. First of all, to identify the specific kind of methodology in terms of the implementation of the registration exercise that was needed to have been introduced, and then to develop applicable procedures and regulations which could subsequently be drafted into what I would call electoral registration manuals. And those manuals were reviewed, were sent to the board, and subsequently approved by the board. And basic regulations within the manuals were taught to a couple of subordinate hired non-permanent but essential electoral workers, and those electoral workers subsequently in a cascade training exercise provided training to other subordinate members of the within the electoral pyramid, and subsequently it got down to those people who were supposed to operate the centers that were responsible for voters registration. There were very critical issues that came up in the voters registration. The issue of providing identification cards for electorate, understanding the fact that we had emerged from war and we did not have a substantive data bank in terms of civil registration for electorate in the country. So what is it that was needed, basically, in terms of getting involved with registering the voters? We developed a couple of indicative procedures. Some of them were targeting the introduction by an electorate of a passport, a Liberian passport. In certain instances, the submission of a national identification card, and then in other cases, the submission of a birth certificate. We had these as requirements. But these minimum criteria could not even suffice for the exercise because the entire idea of documentation was in disarray as far as our emergence from the war situation was concerned. And so we managed to train the registration, the registration workers to first of all use identifying the language culture of the registrant, you know, as the mode for authentication as to whether the person was a Liberian, because you understand Liberians speak like Liberians. There's a particular culture above our language exercise, even the Liberian English that we do speak. So basically that was the first entry requirement in that. And then when there was a contestation as it relates to citizenship or contestation, meaning there was then this need for the submission of the documentation that I named earlier in order to authenticate. In rural areas, we envisioned complication, and we did actually experience that, especially within areas where we had porous borders with our neighboring countries. It was quite a difficult thing, you know, to identify who actually was a Liberian, given migration here and there as a result of the civil hostilities in the country. But then we enshrined within the registration procedure requirement for what we call a voting exercise, meaning some traditional leadership, a member of the traditional leadership structure within that particular area will vouch for that particular person as a witness that they can verify that this person is a resident of the area, and in fact they are a citizen of that particular area. In on that particular scenario, that registration was done, but done on a specific reservations. Then at the appropriate time, those reservations were clear, having submitted substantive documentation and other proofs as to your citizenship. And that was during the claims and counterclaims period for admission or rejection of a particular registrant in the exercise. So basically, it's a whole litany of things in that arrangement. But primarily, these were the key things as it relates to voter registration that I can instantly remember.
Also during this period, was there allocation to polls and constituencies during the registration period?
Actually, the registration exercise in 2005, if my memory do serve me rightly, the registration exercise, the registration data bank function in dual capacity. The first capacity was to function as a data pool for the total number of registered voters who could be processed through the electoral process. The second one, use of the registration data was to establish a tentative census report as to the total number of eligible voters, and to use that registration data bank, you know, as a sort of beginning statistic benchmark for the demarcation, you know, of constituencies and electoral districts. So basically, because census had not been conducted as a result of the war in Liberia, the registration information data bank constituted, you know, the indicative census information that the Electoral Commission used. And after the completion of the voter registration exercise, we got involved with the constituency delimitation exercise. And then the constituency delimitation exercise culminated, but was as a result of the development of a quota system. And that particular quota system placed certain registered voters in a particular electoral district in order to determine the total number of electoral districts that we had in the entire electoral cycle for the operation of elections in 2005. And as a result of that, based on the delimitation exercise, we had 64 electoral districts across Liberia. And then for the senatorial category, by statutory provision, we had 2 senators for each of the counties. And so that went through. And that quota was factored across the entire country. And so you have areas that had a substantive number of population increment or having the higher number of seats in the parliament, and as a result of that. So basically, that's how the electoral registration data bank informed the electoral exercise.
What controls were developed to prevent multiple false or erroneous registrations? Were any technologies used?
Oh, yes, to the best of my knowledge, there was an IT system. I don't have sufficient proficiency in IT activities, but there was a tracking system within the IT setup, in information technology and data collection system, that could track, multiple, registration in a way. Also, our pool workers, but registration workers in that case, were trained to identify persons who came out, to register twice on the basis of the information provided in the early stages. And secondly, as a result of using special kinds of ink within the cuticles of the thumb of the registrants, in order to be able to, and the ink, as per our understanding, lasted for a particular period of time as a security feature in order to give information to the registration worker to understand that this person might have gone through one form of registration in the first instance and things like that. And when the data is collected, data are collected from the field and then sent down to the data processing center, it's also identified the multiple voting kind of phenomenon speaks out also through the capturing of the photographs of those individuals from the what we call the optical mark recognition forms, which were used for scanning, which were scanned and then for the development of what we call a provisional voter's roll. These were safety measures in place. There were specific regulatory legal regimentation of the exercise when you were caught in the process through civic sensitization. There was information that you will be prosecuted through the criminal justice system because multiple registration was classified as an electoral offense. And I remember one or two instances where a number of persons, especially an elderly woman, got involved with multiple registration. And I understand she had over 6 registration cards because she moved from one point to another. But I did not personally follow up the case, but information received from those who follow up the case indicated that she in fact did not have substantive information. She did not have sufficient information as well as substantive information as to what the entire exercise of electioneering was. She saw the electoral process as a food ration distribution card taking process. So she felt that placed her involvement at a multiple level places her at an advantage point to be able to scoop out more food from the food basket. So those were situations that we heard of, and that some other persons made some follow-ups upon, and we got these feedbacks.
Were there steps taken to prevent local leaders from dictating who could register?
Yeah, there were steps taken to prevent local authorities from hampering electorate to participate in the registration process. First of all, emerging from the war situation, we had a period of stability for about 2 years after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Accord in Ghana. There was a transitional government in place for 2 years, and as a result of that transitional process, there was some level of sanity within the society. So we did not immediately project from the war into elections. We projected from the war into a period of quote-unquote temporary normalcy, where there was substantive civic education, both by civil society organizations and the Electoral Commission, and as well as the government, to disabuse people's minds of the concept of acting in contexts that were not appropriate for a decent and civilized society. So there was a bit of an improvement in that arrangement. And there were also consultations held across the country, and that was one of the most manifesting tool that was used by the policy structure of the Electoral Commission in terms of the improvement of the sample space of electorates for participation in the electoral exercise, especially local leadership. Local leadership were met in consultation from time to time. They were told what their responsibilities are, or what their responsibilities should have been in the exercise. They were told that. The electorate were also educated through our civic sensitization initiative as to what was expected of them, who is it that was not expected to influence their vote or their decision or their mindset with respect to this exercise. So basically these were civil as well as policy and strategic initiatives that were set in place in order to help the electorate as well as the local leadership to observe specific roots of thumb in terms of how they adapted themselves in the electoral exercise.
How was the integrity of the registration lists safeguarded after the lists were compiled?
Well, after the provisional registration process completed, that is the period of collecting information from electorate in the field and then compile into a general roll, that particular listing was sent out subsequently during a period called the exhibition period. And during the exhibition period, I think the exhibition period was an integrity building period for the provisional voters' roll as well, because the information was publicized. There was sensitization surrounding the information as to how the public should respond to that. The public went out to view their information to establish authenticity with respect to the spelling of their name, their age reflection, their photographs placement. And then and that period was also used as a period to be able to spot out persons that they knew were not qualified under the regulatory regime that had been set up to have formed part of the provisional roll, so that in the finale they would not be reflected in what we record as the final voter's roll. And so all of these things supported the integrity process for the provisional voter's roll, as far as I know.
Could you describe the registration card, features of the registration card?
Well, the registration card, I might not remember everything of it, but just to put you through a cap of that, it had a serial number. There was an electoral district number for a specific electoral district having known, and there was a registration center number, there was a name of the registrant, the photograph of the registrant was reflected, the voter identification number was also reflected, there was a space on the OMR form which the registrant had to sign or place a thumb mark within in order to indicate that they are the valid person entitled to that particular card and the rest of that. And then it was laminated to insulate it from spoilage in the short term. Those are things. And your sex was also indicated as well. Your sex was also indicated. And I think a number of other things I might not be able to recall.
What logistical and operational obstacles were encountered in conducting voter registration, and how did you overcome them?
Well, at the level of training, the logistical constraints that I think we had were basically the cameras that we were using. Some of the cameras were actually not or state-of-the-art equipment. Some of them were nearly obsolete. In fact, I understand the Polaroid camera are not in use any longer. And so that created some complications. And going along with that was the cell, the wet cells, the dry cells batteries that were used in the cameras. And then the exposure effect for using those cameras in certain areas that were not clear, given the poor sophistication and things like that. The second complication that was associated in terms of logistical arrangement was transportation. Transportation, easy transportation of registration and poll workers. In a lot of instances, poll registration workers had to travel great distances across rivers and streams and huge bodies of waters. They had to go over natural features like hills, travel through jungles and forests to get at certain ends, you know, to be able to conduct their exercises. And then the issue of communication also was a serious barrier, because in certain cases, in certain areas, there were no cellular phone communication extension, there were no HF radio system, there were no telephone system and the rest of that. So it was like complicated more or less to have policed or supervised them easily in those areas or to reach those areas to be able to do a particular thing. But I must say, given our collaboration with the Army Electoral Division, most of these problems were taken care of. Most of these problems were handled through their superior logistical powers and intervention. So, but there were some ends that were still far without the stretch of their intervention. So, these were complications. Another thing that happened was that preceding the voter registration exercise was what we refer to as the mapping exercise of the different registration zones. The mapping exercises of the different registration zones. And the mapping exercises were supposed to take into consideration certain some distances in terms of allowing electorate to have easy access to voting facilities such as registration centers and the rest of that. But that was not the case in certain situations. So a large number of administrative districts had to be paired together to move into certain areas. And movement into these areas was quite a challenge for a number of people who could not have easily traveled those distances to access the registration points and registration centers. So technically, some individuals got disenfranchised as a result of the logistical constraints that we experience. We still do receive some feedback, query as to why they did not participate even two or three years after the elections to date. We still do receive those kinds of feedbacks, you know. When we get out for other initiatives and they understand this is an electoral commission, well, you people did not reach us the last time, we didn't participate, and the rest of that. In Grand Bassa County, there was one such concern a couple of months back when we had some program there. So these are common things that that we all experience. But I'm sure those in logistics can speak in detail about, you know, logistical planning.
Speaking of the operations on polling day, would you describe the system of the polling centers and stations in terms of their setup and how well you think that worked?
Yeah, the polling centers. Did I understand you say polling center or registration centers?
We've moved on to voting day.
Okay, straight to the polling centers. Well, the polling centers were well set up. First of all, in a training exercise, we always develop a flow plan, a training flow plan. And that training flow plan would include planning arrangement that will reflect sitting arrangement for the pool workers. And that we reinforce easy access to the electoral facilities that were there for participation in the polling day activities. And then we also developed the information in training in a way that we allow for the pool workers to set up a very free route for the flow of voters on voting day. So to give you an imaginary description of what an ideal polling center was, we had a precinct queue controller. The precinct is a combination of different polling centers. So from one to, say, six polling centers constituted a precinct. A voting precinct, and within that voting precinct were a number of pool workers, and the polling place or the polling center was headed by a presiding officer, a polling place presiding officers, you know. So it was like the polling place presiding officers was assisted by the queue controller. In several instances, we had what we call the precinct queue controller. So the precinct queue controller was positioned outside of the precinct, and then there was a queue of voters in outside of the polling center. The precinct queue controller were see the identification card, the voter's registration card of that particular voter, and then direct the voter to a polling place queue. From the polling precinct queue to the polling place what? Queue. And that's a specific queue for polling place 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever the case might have been in 2005. And so the polling precinct, the polling place, the voter will be met by another queue controller who represents the polling place, who's standing out for the polling place. And that person will process that voter through the voting process by going to the voter's identification officer. The voter identification officer was the custodian of the final voter's roll, and within that final voter's roll was the photograph of the voter. And that photograph, there was supposed to be a correspondence between the photograph in the voter registration card and then that which is found in the final registration roll. Having established the consistency between those two photographs, that particular voter was cleared, the consistency between the photographs and other information as it relates to those on the card and in the registration roll, that voter was advised to move to the ballot paper issuer. The ballot paper issuer, who was another officer assisting the presiding officer to operate the poll. And then the ballot paper issuer will pre-fold a ballot, educate the voter on how to apply the ballot, and then the voter will be advised to go and do the marking of the ballot in behind the voting screen, and having marked the ballot, cast the ballot, and then goes out to the inker. Because there were three different elections being run in 2005. That's the presidential and the legislative election, which was in two components: the election for the House and the lower House, the upper and lower House, Senate and the representative version of election. So there were three boxes, and then those three boxes were used. There was a ballot box controller who was positioned closer to those three boxes and directing which of the boxes could take which ballot and the rest of that. So that was done, and after that was done, the voter moves to the inker, who puts the mark of identification to indicate that they had gone through the voting process for that day, and then they exited the polling center. So basically, that's a description of what it was.
Very thorough.
Yeah.
How many voters were polling stations configured to serve?
Well, each polling place was configured to serve 500 voters. 500 voters. That was the maximum.
And approximately, it looks like there were 7 people per station?
Yes, 7 people per station. I wouldn't remember the exact number of her, but I'm sure it was in the category of 7 persons per station. Yeah.
Were there any concerns about the use of some facilities because of a history of the building or its ownership?
Oh, yes. There were a couple of issues, and there were usually public facilities were used, such as public schools, or clinics, administrative centers, administrative buildings within districts and communities and things like that. In certain cases, the village palaver huts were used, you know, as polling centers, and then in extreme cases, private residences were used and as polling centers with the provision of some compensation to those people who had those private facilities. Even for the public facilities, in certain instances, some small compensation had to be provided, you know, for sanitation and maintenance work within those areas, you know. So basically, those were the arrangements. In very few cases, or a sheet, you know, a sheet on a big tree or so, you know, could be used, you know, for a polling center, especially when the weather condition was quite favorable and not threatening any of the electoral materials that were being sent in the field. Yeah.
Were there any ballot security measures put in place at polling stations to inhibit vote fraud by election officials or political contestants?
Yeah, certainly. There were ballot security measures put in place. At least that were handled by the logistical section and then the printing press. In fact, the ballots were printed outside of the country to provide, you know, additional security measures. And the ballots were not given to the poll workers in advance of the time, but were delivered by our electoral supervisors on the day of the elections. We had procedures in place where there were reconciliatory processes in our procedures for verifying which what quantity of ballots were given you in the first place, what quantity did go into the casting exercise, what quantity did remain in stock as unused ballots, and then what the correlations are between and amongst all of these different phases of the ballots that were issued out. And so we could track and determine exactly how much ballots we did put in the field at certain points and how much did come out, what the differentials are with respect to what we put out and what did come out. And then there were inquiry procedures in place where there were discrepancies, and then the particular poll worker could be identified based on the coding system and then your identification system as well. And then you will face investigation as it relates to your handling of the ballots and whatever. So there were sufficient, in my mind, sufficient security measures and features put in place. And I also understand that the ballot itself, there's a distinction between what a ballot paper is and what a ballot is, actually. The ballot paper is that special kind of paper which doesn't carry the photograph of the candidates and the contestants and what have you, but that contain basic security features that is used for the printing of ballots. So these guidelines were put in place. What the specific features were not at my level to be able to determine. You know. Yeah.
Did you experience family voting at any point, where one family member would tell the others how to vote? And how did people try to address this problem if it occurred?
Yeah. Well, at a polling center, there was a no campaign regulation. So it was a little difficult when we were doing our outreach supervision on polling day to determine actually whether there was this family voting arrangement. But from the campaigning exercise in homes, there were bitter debates and arguments among families as to which candidates were the best candidates, as it happens in all elections all across the world. So these kinds of influences and counter influences, you know, were swinging between family, between and amongst family members, and as it relates to what choice to make. With respect to the influencing the decision of a voter at the voting station, I can't remember those incidences very well.
Were the ballots counted at the polling station or shipped to a regional center?
No, yes. They were counted at a polling center. They were counted in the polling place immediately after all of the votes were cast at 6 p.m. That was the time set for counting the ballots. So they were counted instantly. And then the what we call the record of the count, which is a compilation of the votes attracted by all of the candidates, contestants in the process, as well as other information pertaining to the operation of the pool for that day, was published immediately outside of the polling place. And so every party, every candidate knew exactly how many votes they got, how many votes did not get cast, and then how many persons, quote-unquote, participated in the exercise.
Returning to your position specifically,
right,
do you have any recommendations for someone who is doing your work in a context that is similar to this?
Yeah. First of all, to find yourself in electoral training, you must have, you must be a team worker. Secondly, you must be able to work on a intense environment, which is politically charged as well as logistically there's a range in setting temporary instances. You must also be able to have a working knowledge of the electoral regulations and laws that govern the particular jurisdiction in which you are operating an electoral process. You must have that. You must also have knowledge of what it is to be a person providing critical information to a wide range of people who will control a process that operates at the nerve center of the interests of the state in a politically charged environment, as well as in a transitional society. You must have had working knowledge of that. You must be open to criticism, and you must also be hardworking. And you must be in a position to expose whatever difficulties you encounter immediately when they come your way, because an exposure will lead to the process of finding a solution immediately for that particular situation or that particular problem. So you must be able to expose whatever problem comes your way immediately. You must be able to take instructions very well. You must be able to take instructions very well. You must also be able to transcribe regulations into implementable procedures, because what the poll workers and voter registrars do in the field are basically an implementation of procedures that were developed from the regulations, transcribed into implementable or strategies for effecting a particular process. So you must be able to have that critical comprehensible skill to transcribe from one abstract kind of a pool of instruction to something that will physically affect a particular environment. So there's a bit of creativity that goes into that, into doing that. And you must be able to have the reflex to adjust immediately when there's a change on the other side, on one side or the other. Yes. And so basically these are simple recommendations to anyone who cooperates in that area.
Mr. Wallace, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.